Welcome to the online ministry of Pacific Beach United Methodist Church, located in beautiful San Diego, California. Pacific Beach UMC is a member of the Reconciling Ministries Network and welcomes persons of all ages and backgrounds for worship, study, and service opportunities. More information can be found on our website at pbumc.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing. I want to start as we enter into this sermon series on defiance, on the Gospel of Mark, with an understanding, sort of as I've said earlier, that really one of the things that we see in all of the Gospels when it comes to Jesus' ministry is he consistently goes to those who are on the margins. He consistently goes to those who are excluded. And I think it's important that we understand that when he does those things, he's pushing back against cultural tradition, cultural appropriateness, religious tradition and appropriateness. When Jesus goes to those who are excluded, it's not something that everybody who observes says, oh yeah, that's the right thing to do. Like when people in the Gospels, and in some cases people today, observe that kind of action, going to the margins, going to those who are excluded, often the response is, oh, you can't do that. Those are the wrong people. Those are the people who are dirty or unhealthy or incompatible with religious teaching. Those are the other people. And of course, in doing that, we no longer see someone's humanity. And frankly, I think that's something that we must pay attention to these days, as culturally there seems to me to be some kind of a shift taking place. Statistically, the number of hate crimes over the last year and a half to 2 years has risen by hundreds of percent. We hear more often, sometimes face to face and not even just on the news, about white supremacy, about overt sexism, about objectification of women, about continuing to assign other to particular groups of people. Culturally, that shift seems to be happening right now. And so what better time to explore the message in the gospel of defying cultural norm. Of course, I think in all things we should be rooted in Scripture, and so I'd like for us to take a look at a text from the second chapter of the Gospel of Mark. And this is early in the Gospel of Mark. This is early in Jesus' ministry. You know, the Gospel of Mark doesn't have much in terms of an infancy narrative. We don't get anything of Jesus' childhood in the Gospel of Mark. Mark, one of the things I like about Mark, not only is it the shortest Gospel, but Mark is the one where immediately the next thing happens. If you read the Gospel of Mark, you see the word immediately all throughout. It's fast-paced. And I like action movies, so I like fast-paced. And so this is early in the Gospel of Mark. It's early in Jesus' ministry. And listen to what happens as Jesus calls one of his disciples, and it's an unexpected person.
Jesus went out beside the lake again. The whole crowd came to him, and he began to teach them. As he continued along, he saw Levi, Alphaeus' son, sitting at a kiosk for collecting taxes. Jesus said to him, "Follow me." Levi got up and followed him. Jesus sat down to eat at Levi's house. Many tax collectors and sinners were eating with Jesus and his disciples. Indeed, many of them had become his followers. When some of the legal experts from among the Pharisees saw that he was eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why is he eating with sinners and tax collectors?" When Jesus heard it, he said to them, "Healthy people don't need a doctor, but sick people do. I didn't come to call righteous people, but sinners."
See, in the Gospels, we often find Jesus at odds with the religious leaders. And often we name those religious leaders as scribes, and often we name them as Pharisees. Do you know the root of that word Pharisee? Do you know one of the things that we can take out of the root, the Greek word for Pharisee? Well, and it's probably an older word as well. But do you know one of the roots we can get out of that? Is someone set apart in righteousness. Do you know why I have trouble with that idea of someone set apart in righteousness? It's not a negative thing. It's that in our current tradition, I'm an ordained elder in the United Methodist Church. And you know one of the ways we talk about people who are ordained in our tradition? We talk about people who are set apart for ministry. That lines me up with Pharisees, and I don't like them very much. So this is one of the ways that I struggle with this because Jesus seems to continually be at odds with the Pharisees. And he is in this story as well. Now, when at the beginning of this text, as Emily read, Jesus went outside beside the lake again. All right, so where is he? Okay, so if we look just at the beginning of this chapter, it says that after a few days, Jesus had gone back to Capernaum, and people heard that he was at home. Now, just a quick little aside, like Jesus was at home. I want to know what Jesus' house looked like. I'm pretty sure it wasn't like a split-level duplex. Okay. Often homes in the area might have been made from natural materials, depending on precisely where it was. It may have been, primarily a dirt or mud kind of compound. There may have been some other kinds of materials used. Very often in the period, homes would be dug in, so there'd be portions underground, right? But I just want to know what Jesus' house looked like. It's clear in a number of the Gospels that he had a tendency to center his ministry around Capernaum. And that's how it's described here. So he's in Capernaum, near a lake. Okay, and he'd been indoors, and there were people gathered. In fact, verse 2 of this chapter says, "So many gathered that there was no longer space, not even near the door." Some people arrived, and Jesus was speaking, and then there's a man who was paralyzed. They bring a man who's paralyzed, and Jesus heals him. Okay. And then Jesus decides, I'm going to leave this space. But what has happened in that time is a large crowd has gathered. You imagine, you hear about somebody at their place and they're just sort of the buzz happening, right? And you might want to go and check out who it is. But imagine the increase of the buzz. This guy who we all know is paralyzed is suddenly walking around again and he came out of that house. I want to go see. Wouldn't you want to go and see? Do you understand why the crowd has gathered? So it's a sizable crowd. So Jesus goes outside and goes by the lake, and the whole crowd came with him, and he began to teach them. Now, as he continued along, he saw Levi sitting at a kiosk for collecting taxes. Now, we might make some assumptions just based on a little bit of information, educated assumptions even. See, Levi, that's kind of a holy name. That means that it's someone who's from one of the 12 tribes of Israel, right? From the tribe of Levi. If not directly in line with that tribe of Israel, certainly connected or named after in some way. But this person is at a kiosk for collecting taxes. You see, one of the ways that taxes might be collected in this time period would be to set up a kiosk by a road. It'd be sort of like a toll road. And so if you want to use the road, you've got to pay the tax. And to whom does the tax go? Some of it goes in the tax collector's pocket. Some of it goes to King Herod, which really is a puppet king a puppet king who is really serving the Roman occupying power. So there are a number of ways that tax collectors are disliked, which is really too nice a term. The tax collectors are reviled. Right? Because, to be honest, none of us like going to our favorite tax preparer to send some of our money to the IRS, right? That's not like a high part of our annual year, is it? Right? But imagine you can't even travel without paying a tax. And then in doing so, you're paying a tax that ultimately you know is going to an occupying power. And then think about this person, Levi, likely a faithful Jew, except they're collaborating with that occupying power. And then just in terms of the religiosity of it, this person's not only collecting taxes from Jews, but Gentiles as well. That means they're handling Gentile money. They might be touching hands. And oh my gosh, there's all this ritual uncleanliness that comes along with that. Do you see why tax collectors are reviled? But think about this. Is Jesus just walking down the road by himself? No. He's with a big crowd. And in the midst of the entirety of this crowd, who is it that Jesus picks and says, "Follow me"? The tax collector. Jesus could have picked anybody in the crowd. And Jesus picks the tax collector. I want to parallel this with something personal for a minute. Not personal for me, I would just want to invite you to think about this personally, about whether or not you have been at your deepest, darkest moment and you felt that nudge, that presence to change something in your life. And you might even have experienced as the presence of God, or the presence of Christ calling out to you to say, "Follow me." I don't know if you felt that way. I think that I have, even if I didn't want to admit it at the time. Jesus looks around this entire crowd and picks this guy, Levi. He says, "Follow me." And Levi got up and followed him. Levi didn't take some time to close up his shop. He didn't take time to pack up all the money and make sure it got off to Herod or the Roman authorities. Levi got up and followed. You know what it reminds me of? James and John, the sons of thunder, who left their dad sitting in a boat when Jesus called. To me, that's what I understand Levi doing. He left it all behind and followed Jesus. So Levi follows Jesus, and Jesus goes to Levi's house and sits down. The way it reads, Jesus sat down to eat at Levi's house. Now, if we look at the Greek, it's not just sitting down. It's not like the dinner party we see in the image on the screen here. You know, it's not like the restaurant where maybe you have the tables at the regular height and sometimes you have the high tables, right? And you get to sit in the chairs and you know, have the fancy. It's not like that. In first century Palestine, if you're eating with someone, tax collector might be pretty well-to-do because they're skimming a little bit, okay? But there's a table and it's pretty low to the ground, okay? And then there are cushions around that table, and really what you're doing is reclining. And the Greek word used in this case is really more appropriately translated as reclining. Jesus is reclining. This is not fast food. Jesus is hanging out with this person. And when you think about sitting down at a meal where you're reclining, where you're spending your time and energy, there's a certain intimacy that comes along with that that maybe you don't quite get as much when you're sitting at McDonald's. Jesus is reclining and spending time and energy and spirit in this place with this guy who is a traitor, a betrayer, and who handles dirty money, and who is a collaborator with the Roman occupying power. Many tax collectors and sinners, not just the one, many tax collectors and sinners are eating with Jesus and his disciples. Indeed, many of them had become his followers. When some of the legal experts from among the Pharisees, those set apart in righteousness, saw that he was eating with sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why is he eating with sinners and tax collectors?" When Jesus said it, He said to them, healthy people don't need a doctor, but sick people do. I didn't come to call righteous people, but sinners. Jesus continues to go to those who are excluded. Jesus continues to go to those who are told, you're not enough. Jesus continues to go to those who we have a tendency to tell in our culture, you're too broken. You're irredeemable. Jesus continues to go to the people who need him the most. I had the great privilege of being with 75 high schoolers this last week. I'm surprised I'm standing and awake. And we had a number of theological explorations throughout the day, but I want to tell you just briefly about one that happened on Friday morning. You see, we were talking about the story of the Good Samaritan, and I thought it might be a good idea. You know, we know the story of the Good Samaritan. There's somebody who's beat up and robbed, and they're on the side of the road, and a priest comes by and ignores him. And a Levite comes by and ignores him. And finally, a Samaritan comes by and helps him and takes him to an innkeeper. And so, you know, one of the things we talked about was, you know, what groups in our culture today can we assign to some of those parts? And I didn't answer any of the questions. It all came from these 75 high schoolers who said, well, maybe the person by the side of the road is a homeless person. And maybe that person going by first who ignores that homeless person, maybe that's the church. Right that second, it got kind of real. And maybe that second person who goes by and ignores that homeless person, maybe that's politicians. And who is it who stops and helps that homeless person on the side of the road? You know who they decided that would be? A trans woman of color. Oh. I can't remember if I said this last week. I think I did because I heard it last weekend at one of the Pride celebrations. There have been, what, 15 trans women of color murdered in hate crimes this year? This year. That is who our high schoolers picked to be the one who we need to think about as the Good Samaritan, the one who we need to think about as our neighbor. When Jesus tells us to love our neighbor, who is it that Jesus is talking about? Those who are excluded, those who are marginalized. When Jesus calls a tax collector and then goes to eat at this tax collector's home and he's criticized by those who are set apart in righteousness, who is it that Jesus says need him the most? I don't go to people who are healthy. The doctor doesn't need to go to the people who are healthy. The doctor needs to go to the people who are sick. Who does Jesus come for? The people who are marginalized, the people who are beaten down and left on the side of the road. I said this last service, and I felt a little bit challenged by saying it, but I felt moved to say it then, and I feel moved to say it now. The church is not here for us. The church is not here for us. The church is here for people on the margins. Now, part of what that means is the church is here to teach us, to sustain us, so that we too can go to the margins, so that we too can serve those on the margins. But if Jesus spent his time and energy particularly going to those who needed him the most, and if we call ourselves the body of Christ, then doesn't it make sense that we too should be going to the places that need the church the most? Now that comes with all sorts of challenges. That comes with all sorts of ways that we need to make sure we practice good self-care and practice good safety and good boundaries. But that should not keep us from serving those who our culture and sometimes even the church says are not worthy of service, who are not worthy of our time. If we are to follow Jesus, we must go to those who are excluded. We must say, there's a phrase that was all over camp this last week, we must say, you are beautiful. You are enough. The world needs someone like you. Who are we? Are we the church? Then that's where we have to go. Let's enter into a time of prayer. Holy God, as we breathe in your Spirit in this place, as we hear the melodies and harmonies of the ways that you connect us, as we search for the rhythm of your grace in our lives, help us to hear you, help us to sense you, help us to experience your Spirit. Help us, O God, to know that you are in us and around us, that you are in the in-between spaces, and that you are in the world. Help us to know when we have questions and doubts, when we fall on our knees in grief, that you are with us. Help us when we have the smallest glimmer of hope that you will help to light that spark into a flame. Help us to know when we experience immense joy that you celebrate with us and through us. God, as we are gathered in this community of faith, as we experience this connection with one another, we lift up these prayers of your people. God, we lift up all of these things and any that are left unsaid as we join together in the prayer taught to us by your Son, our Christ, as we say, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.